Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's I, Len Testa, and we're back from our jaunt up to New York for our World's Fair talk, and we are back in the studio with another episode. Today we're talking with Jim about the history of Disney's expansion in the late 80s and early 90s. As you guys know, that Disney's rapidly expanding with the world of Avatar and possibly with something at the studios, maybe Star Wars, maybe Pixarland. But really, the last big expansion that Disney did was in the late 1980s and into the 1990s. And that is intimately tied up with, believe it or not, Disney's Wilderness Preserve. To give us all the details, welcome back, please, Mr. Jim Hill. How's it going, Jim?
I'm doing great, Len. Thanks for asking.
Is it snowing yet where you're at?
You know, there were rumors of it happening this week, and I think we're going to dodge the bullet, but just
barely.
You know, which is why Florida would be so nice right about now.
it would be. So we started talking about this, but we didn't go into much detail before we started recording the show. But apparently, you say that the key to Disney's last big expansion was a tract of land almost 20 miles away from Walt Disney World.
Yeah, I mean, it plays a really key role in Disney being able to take a lot of the land that it held in Osceola County and finally make that into stuff that you know, they could put hotels and theme parks and the like on. But
So let's start. So Disney's Wilderness Preserve is what?
It's this 1,200 acre parcel that's actually close to Poinciana, out in Osceola County. If you're trying to orient yourself, folks, this is about 17 miles south of the resort. And I know for a lot of people, they don't really know about this because while it shares the Disney name, face it, when you're on vacation in Orlando, you know, you want to stay at a resort, you want to go to a theme park, and this is both physically and mentally about as far away as you can get from a resort or a theme park as you can get. I mean, it's a 6 mile long, network of walking trails. There's a relatively modest visitor center. And the only other big claim to fame is that this is the home of Lake Russell, which is one of Central Florida's last remaining undeveloped lakes. But, you know, you have to understand though that one of the reasons that Walt Disney was drawn to Central Florida is when they were hunting for a home for Project Florida is when they did a flyover of Bay Lake and what was then known as Raz Island rather than Discovery Island. Walt just loved what he saw. I mean, what's kind of bizarre about this story is the day that Walt did the flyover was November 22nd, 1963.
Was it really?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
the day Kennedy was shot.
That's it, exactly. And in fact, that they landed in New Orleans after doing the flyover, and you know, everybody in the plane was jazzed because this is the place, we finally found it, and you know, and
nobody cared. Nobody on that day cared.
Yeah, and more to the point, you know, they get off the plane, they get the news, and you know, of course, everybody is crushed on the plane. On the flag, the back, but Walt, you know, still insisted that's the place we're going to do this.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of the reason that Walt did this is because, you know, what happened a decade earlier when he was doing the land search of Disneyland.
Okay. So there he had done studies with like Rand and think tanks, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's he had Buzz Price on board who, you know, for Stanford Research in 1953-54 had done all the land search, and Walt thought, you know, well, I'm going to buy 100 acres of land, you know, out in Anaheim at the corner of Harbor and Gatella, and it's surrounded by orange groves, and that'll be enough to protect me from everything.
It was a different time.
that's the thing that, in fact, what Buzz Price had told him in the surveys is, look, in 25 years, you know, this is going to be the very center of Orange County, that the suburb is going to walk out this way, the shops, the restaurants and everything. But building Disneyland turbocharged that change. So within 8 years, there was, you know, there were all these cheap motels and neon signs outside of Disneyland. More to the point, in a couple of places within the park, you could actually see outside. You could see the stuff that had been built. And here's Walt working so hard to create sort of this futuristic fantasy environment. And
there's a Holiday Inn across the street.
Yeah, exactly. It's just intruding. So it's like, so that's why when he went to Florida, one of the rules was, it's like, look, I don't want 100 acres. I want thousands of acres. I want, you know, a perimeter that, you know, will keep out the outside world. And, you know, at the same time, you know, he knew that what he was going to do was develop a good portion of this property, but allow the rest of it to stay sort of wild as a buffer.
Yep.
And this is where it gets kind of tough, because I know a lot of people like to buy into the, you know, the part of the Walt Disney bio about him being, you know, this big time naturalist. And yeah, don't get me wrong, Walt loved animals. He had dogs and cats his entire life, and of course the studio made the True Life Adventure films.
Yep. And he appreciated and nature.
He did.
Okay.
And he was recognized lots of times for his conservation efforts. He did made all sorts of PSAs, you know, early on for, you know, the Forest Service and that sort of thing. But at the same time, Walt was a realist and a pragmatist. And while he talked a good game about being a naturalist, this was also the guy who was looking to build Mineral King, which was going to be this alpine-themed ski area right next door to Sequoia National Forest. So, you know, and even when he was designing Walt Disney World, you know, there's that famous napkin where he sort of sketched out, you know, how he wanted the resort laid out, when they were going to have the north-south road that led to where, you know, up to where the resorts of the Magic Kingdom was. But right on this napkin is a note to the effect of, this is where I want my swamp ride to go.
You really? Know? A swamp ride?
Yeah. And in fact, what's kind of bizarre is that back in the late 1950s, Walt had put an attraction into the park that only lasted about 6 months. It was in Tomorrowland called the Phantom Boats, and they never worked. I mean, you know, that you'd get in them. They sort of look like Batman's, you know, the Batman boat from the 1960s television series.
Sure.
But they'd get like 10 feet out from shore. The engine would die and have to be towed back into shore. But Walt had this lake in the middle of Tomorrowland, and
there was a lake in the middle of Tomorrowland.
Yep. Yep.
Is it where the subs are now?
Pretty close. In fact, you know, in fact, if you did the overlay of the old map to today, I want to say a third to half of the lagoon for the subs is where this lake was.
Wow.
Anyway, so Walt had this lake built for the Phantom Boats. There was nothing in the lake. Suddenly a billboard goes up because Walt wants to do, you know, coming to Tomorrowland is the airboat ride. And sure enough, it's the airboat we've all seen from the footage of Florida, the big fan on the back of the boat and skipping across the water. And he advertised it. He evidently bought the boats. And this was back in the day when Disneyland would be closed on Mondays and Tuesdays during the fall, winter, and early spring.
Sure.
And so evidently Walt brought the boat in or brought one of the boats in, threw it in the lagoon, fired it up, and everybody agreed it was a great ride.
Everybody that could still hear when it was done.
There you go.
Was that it, really?
That's what happened.
You've been on a swamp boat before, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
It's the loudest thing ever. It's essentially a small aircraft engine, unmuffled.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what did it in. Everyone agreed, great ride, fun experience, but when you could hear it in Frontierland, you know, it's just like, it's destroying the atmosphere of the rest of the park. We can't, so billboard comes down, but this is something Walt always wanted to include. So he insisted, you know, when he was dumbing it out the park, or what they're going to do with Walt Disney World, it's like, okay, this has got to be part of this. But then, of course, you know, December of 66, Walt dies after a suitable period of mourning. Roy O steps in, and they begin the site prep for Disney World. So, and so much of this was just about carving out land. You know, just for example, there are 55 different canals that they built during this period, 40 miles of waterways.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And all of it was
drainage
because
per land, right?
That's it, exactly. Yeah. So they could have stuff to work with. But about this same time, you know, so we're talking 67, 68, the environmental movement in the United States starts to mutate. Like, up until this point, it's kind of been about air pollution, water pollution, mostly about littering, you know.
Right.
I mean, you remember the crying Indian, okay?
I was going to refer to the crying Indian. All right.
There we go. All right. And Smokey the Bear, forest fires, so that sort of thing. But now it starts to take on sort of a broader approach. In fact, the concept of that we have to protect the wetlands because they're a crucial part of the ecosystem. In fact, ecosystem was a word that began to bubble up during this period.
I was just going to say that's about the time that I became cognizant of the word ecology and in ecosystem.
That's it, exactly. I mean, you know, Earth Day, you know, early 70s, that sort of thing.
Sure.
Anyway, about this same time, Disney's having its first battles with environmentalists. I mean, Walt passes away, and Mineral King, Disney finds itself doing battle with the Sierra Club, the very club that the year before had recognized Walt as the naturalist of the year.
Wow. But,
you know, just sort of like with Walt gone, you know, and he was the one who could mount a charm offensive. He's the one who, if something was controversial, Walt could push it through. But with him gone, you know, there was no one to do that battle. And so here's Disney sort of staring down the barrel of, crap, we're going to have to cancel the ski area.
Hmm.
And it's like, what were
the Sierra Club's objections? I mean, just the development in general, or was it something more to it?
Actually, the problem initially was that they had to build an access road to Mineral King. I mean, in fact, one of these days, Len, you and I are going up to Mineral King because
this has The Shining written all over it. Jim, look at you.
Trust me, you won't live long enough to get to the hotel. Okay, the access road to this thing is dirt. It is a car and a half wide, and the one time Nancy and I went up the road, it has the most spectacular view and the most treacherous turns. So the entire time Nancy was like, look at that beautiful view! Don't look! Look at that beautiful view! Don't look! You know, that alone with the one place you can sort of stop for a moment, they actually have a wood sign that says, beware of marmots. Because...
Well, I mean, that's essentially the motto of how I live my life. I mean...
Well, but it's one of these things where you go up to the sign and it's like they want you to be aware that marmots will climb up into your car and eat the hoses in your car to get at the antifreeze.
Marmots and are what, like rabid groundhogs? What are they?
They are pretty much, yes, the cousins that the groundhogs don't like to talk about. but yeah, that's the thing. You have to constantly be aware when you're up in this area to keep the marmots out from under your car. Anyway, all right, so Disney, because of what's going on in Mineral King, starts to fret about what happens if the environmentalists focus on a Walt Disney World. So it's like, all right, we need to do something about that. We need to be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So what they decide to do is, well, look, Walt wanted the buffer zone. Why don't we just make the buffer zone our conservation area? And so this is the language straight out of a 1970 press release. It's like, even though Walt Disney World will be open to all who wish to come, there will be a private area set aside for a special purpose. Over 75 acres of land and water have been designated as a conservation area for the creatures native to this region. Still as primitive as it was 500 years ago, this environment will remain untouched and undisturbed by man. So, and to be specific here, this giant chunk of property, which is mostly located in the southern and western corner of Project Florida, it was mostly made up of the land that Disney had bought in Osceola County.
Okay.
Became known as the Walt Disney World Conservation Area. And
75 acres.
No, 7,500.
Oh, 7,500 acres. Okay, so
yep.
a chunk. Okay.
Okay.
That's about a quarter. A little less than a quarter, a little more than a quarter of how many acres they have, because they have 28,000.
28,000.
Wow.
Of this chunk, 5,000 acres of it is the Reedy Creek Swamp, which is, you know, full of cypress trees, palm trees, palmettos. It's home to deer, cougar, bear, alligators. And what's kind of interesting is that in kind of a sop to Walt's original plans for Project Florida during the early 70s, if you were a serious student of nature, and I, by that I mean you were in, you know, you were doing ecological or environmental studies at the college level, mm-hmm. you actually able, you were allowed to take electric boat rides down. Evidently, there was this mile and a half long creek that bordered on the edge of Reed Creek Swamp, and people were able to go in and do water purification studies, animal studies, that sort of thing.
Wow.
So, you know, and again, I just, this for some odd reason peters out in the mid-70s, I think, mostly because this is about the time Disney starts concentrating on Epcot, but.
So, in the mid-70s, but, so they set it aside.
Yeah.
Yes? All 7,500 acres, it was actually a thing?
The 7,500 acres, and again, very proudly, you know, whenever, you know, talking about ecological studies, that sort of thing, you know, Disney would stress the point, quarter of our land set aside.
Wow.
For
okay.
Never to be touched.
So they actually followed through with what they said they were going to do.
Until 13 years later.
Okay.
This is when Michael Eisner comes through the door.
84.
And,
okay.
You know, and one of the things that Michael is told by the board, as well as the folks who helped to put him in the power, the ones who, you know, bought large chunks of Disney stock and you know, just like gave him the authority to take over the company. It's like, look, you have to develop the property. We have to be making more money off of Walt Disney World. And let's be honest, at that point, you know, we're only talking the two theme parks, the three on-site hotels, coupled with, you know, the four that I guess that were down at Hotel Plaza along with the shopping village,
yeah.
campground and the golf courses. And that's it. I mean, 43 square miles and that's all you've done with that property.
Yeah. I mean, the population density at that point is like a desert. I mean, there's not that many people given the per square acre. Okay.
And more to the point, I mean, you know, to give you some idea of the economic disparity between the amount of development that had been done OCLO versus Orange County, during this period, what Disney had built in Orange County contributed $39 million in property taxes to Orange County.
Okay. Right. So remember, Disney spans Osceola and Orange County. Okay.
Okay. Per year. Okay.
$39 million to Orange County.
Okay. Whereas the 10,000 acres that Disney owns in Osceola County, less than 600,000 total in property tax. So,
wow. I mean, roughly 75, 80 times less developed.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Okay.
Wow.
So it takes them 5 years, but they finally pull together a master plan for development, which they unveil in January of 1990. So this calls for a fourth theme park, which they haven't revealed yet will be what then is known as Disney's Wild Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
29 new attractions for the studio.
Really? What are we going to get 29 new attractions? I think we're like seven. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just that there was, you know.
It was the age of ambition, Jim. It was the age of ambition.
Well, there was another aspect here that within 6 months of Eisner making this announcement, Iraq invades Kuwait. And we suddenly find ourselves in the middle of the Gulf War, which, you know, all of the free money that was available to do these sorts of things dries up. And people stop traveling as much, and it puts a sudden freeze in a lot of things that Disney want to do. But again, we're not at that point yet. We're you know, so we got 29 attractions across the three existing parks. There're going to be seven new hotels with 4,500 rooms. But what caught the attention of everyone who lived in Central Florida was Disney's plans for these 10,000 acres in Osceola County, that this was going to be the site of a 4,400 acre community, which we all know was going to eventually become Celebration, plus a massive shopping mall, transportation hub, some educational and cultural centers. All of this stuff is going to be built over 25 years. And for the Orlando locals, it's now, wait a minute, you know, that's, you're going to do this, whereas at this exact same time, also in Osceola County, you have the Walker Ranch, okay, which is this 8,500-acre cattle ranch, which dates back to 1881. I mean, you know,
really?
You know, this is one of the first things that white men did in the central part of the state. They built this cattle facility.
1881. So I mean, we're talking 15 years after the civil, 16 years after the Civil War ends.
That's it exactly. And
wow. Okay. All right.
What they were looking to do here was build this massive development, which would have 9,000 homes and 6 golf courses. I mean, it was, and it, but again, this one, same thing, that the you know, Iraq goes into Kuwait, and the Gulf War, and in the summer of 1990, the Gulf War happens, and again, a lot of banks panic, get, and so it's like, okay, no free money, and so, this, the firm in Miami that was going to build on Walker Ranch kind of throws up his hands and walks away. But the Central Floridians who live around this in Point Siena know it's only a matter of time if somebody else comes over the hill
right.
and builds another massive development on the heels of Disney's massive development.
Yeah, like right next door to it to take advantage of the, you know, the proximity. Okay.
Yeah, and at the same time, there's a lot of Central Florida locals who actually remember the whole, hey, we've set aside 75, you know, 100 acres.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what happened to that promise?
Well, that was the thing. So, you know, here's, you know, the head of the Florida Audubon Society, Charles Lee, actually calls Disney on it. He reaches out to the press. And Dick Nunes, the president of Disney Attractions at this point, is so offended that he actually they write this article they print in the Eyes and Ears, you know, to the effect of it's like, look, you know, when I announced the Osceola project, I publicly said that we were keeping our conservation area. That statement is still true. You know, however, when you push back at Dick, he was like, well, you know, I like to think of our conservation areas as flexible. So it's like, if we want to build out a certain area, get a portion of the 43 square miles that we own, we could then pick another spot that, you know, we would, you know, could designate as wetlands or, and the problem is the public just does not buy this. All right. That
really, they don't buy Disney's explanation of it.
Yeah, and environmentalists push back real hard. They say Disney's welching on a promise, and Disney actually breaks ground in March of 1991 on the first building in Osceola County. This is actually Celebration Place. In fact, it's where the Disney Cruise Line has the headquarters now.
Mm-hmm.
But it found itself dealing with some pretty heavy negative publicity. And so in the meantime, you know, that coupled with the money's dried up, Disney begins having to scale back its plans for Osceola County. If, you know, what was going to be 5 million square feet of office space and 800 hotels, I mean, and at one point they were talking about 8,400 dwellings, of which almost 3,500 of them are going to be single-family homes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and so, but Disney begins really pulling back on this, but at the same time, they're like, all right, look, this is a PR disaster. We have to turn this around quickly because, you know, we need environmentalists on our side because we're about to open Disney's Wild Animal Kingdom. And, you know, we don't need, I mean, if, you know, anybody who works at SeaWorld right now can tell you.
Yeah, you got to get ahead of those beer things.
Yeah, so it's one of these things where it's like we need to make a big gesture. We need to do something that will silence our critics, but also reaffirm that the company, you know, how the company feels about the environment. And it's then somebody in house comes up with the idea of what if we bought the Walker Ranch? Only we buy it. And we just say we're going to leave it, you know. I mean, we're not only going to leave it pristine, we're going to restore it to the way it was before white men came to Central Florida.
Restore it.
Yeah. And see, that's what's kind of intriguing about, you know, something like this project. Because as it turns out, even doing something as simple as building a road or putting in a drainage ditch changes how a piece of property like this, which is at the very top of the Everglades, you know, it can impact the whole system going forward.
Oh, right. Yeah, because it's so Orlando sits at the near the headwaters of the
headwaters. That's it exactly.
Huh. So anything that so it goes and the water flows north to south in Florida. So anything that happens up around Orlando eventually makes its way down through Central Florida, through South Florida, into the Everglades, and then eventually out into the Wow, okay, that's interesting. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so it's one of these things where it's like, what Disney proposes, this is an auspicious date, September 11th, 1991.
Okay.
Disney steps forward and says, look, we've taken an option on the Walker Ranch. What we want to do is use this 8,500-acre site as an offset for the 10,000 acres that it has in Osceola County. And, you know, that's
it. So it's like, okay, we're breaking your toy. We're buying you a new one somewhere else. Okay. All
that's
right.
It exactly. And you have to understand that once they got the rights, the clearance to start building on this property, that then meant it's not just Animal Kingdom theme park. You're talking the ESPN World, you know, Wide World of Sports. You're talking Animal Kingdom Lodge, the vacation club component of Animal Kingdom Lodge. Got all three of the All-Stars, Pop Century, and Disney.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a lot of stuff that was allowed to happen when this deal happened. But it was really kind of shaky for a while. I mean, Disney initially just took a 90-day option on this piece of property. They put down $1.7 million to hold it for 90 days. And I guess the price at that point was like 12 or 13 million. But they wanted, you know, that again, we will buy this property, but at the same time, they wanted an understanding with environmentalists as well as all of the regulatory folks in Florida. I mean, we're talking about regional, state level,
right.
And as also the feds, with the understanding that there would then be in place what they referred to as a broad brush worst case scenario that would then allow the company, if it wanted to develop all 30,000 acres.
Oh, really? So they can develop all 30,000 if they wanted to?
That's the trade-off here. Now, that's, I think,
one that's of what the, they asked for.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that it took them forever. I mean, you know, in fact, they had to extend a couple of times the option to get this all the way through. But, you know, they did eventually get it cleared.
So how long did it take them from the time that they proposed it? Because, I mean, there's a lot of people you've got to convince here. You've got to convince the county governments. You've got to convince
Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA.
That's what I'm saying. So this isn't something that, you know, you write a letter and then in 2 weeks you get an answer back.
No. And in fact, the other thing is Disney tried to mitigate this in that you know, they pointed out that when it really came down to it, they weren't talking about developing 10,000 acres of wetlands. To be honest, what was really being impacted in the Reedy Creek Swamp was just 555 acres. That's what they needed to blow the road through that would connect to the Osceola County property that was on the other side of I-4. They needed concrete spillways, and they also needed to dig drainage ditches. But it meant cutting through the heart of this area that had previously been, you know, this pristine, you know, sanctuary for deer and cougars and bears and that sort of thing.
Wow.
And at the same time, you know, they tried this to convince people. It's like, look, normally in Florida was one of these states where if you were building something that impacted a wetland, you had to build, you know, an equivalent wetland or restore an equivalent wetland to sort of swap out that, you know, that you couldn't just do damage. You had to build something and then replace what you'd ruined.
Sure.
And what Disney was, you know, in fact, this is a quote from Don Killoran, a Disney development executive. Is like, look, we're not talking about building isolated little wetlands that back up to a parking lot. This mitigation plan, you know, thing. This was the largest ever wetlands mitigation plan ever proposed by a private company in Florida. Disney tried to sell these guys and they had to look, this is the trend for the future. This is how we should do this. And what was kind of interesting is right from the get-go, there were people who did get on with this idea. For example, the South Florida Water Management District, right from the get-go, they saw, this is the way to go, especially since Disney announced that they were going to restore it, but they weren't going to, as soon as they finished restoring it, they were going to turn this over to the Nature Conservancy to run, that Disney wouldn't own it. They would put their name on it.
Oh, really?
Strictly for PR. But, you know, the whole notion of, like, look, we're going to do this, and then we have nothing to do with it. You know, just, you know, that show you how sincere we are about this. We're not going to impact the further development of it. Now, that said, there were people who kind of raised their hands in the middle of all this, as it's starting to go out to the various, you know, agencies and offices to get approved. And because they had looked beyond Celebration toward the All-Stars. And so it's a lot of the hoteliers out along 192 were like, now, wait a minute. You know, if we're allowing Disney to build value resorts, that's going right after us. In fact, Randy Larson of Larson's Lodge Main Gate was quoted as saying, when I hear that, all I can think of, that's scary. That's really scary. because hindsight, you know, being 2020, he was right.
Yeah, he was. once you give them the in, I mean, they just got so many different ways to compete.
Yeah.
Price, publicity. I mean, they're just their machine.
Well, and this is what's fascinating. Back in 1990, the average daily rate for one of the hotel rooms in the Kissimmee area, and at this time, Land, there were 19,947 hotel and motel rooms down
19,000.
That's
adorable.
And on average, they were getting $55.70 a night, whereas the cheapest room on Disney property at that point was $79.
Okay, so, I mean, so 50% more expensive.
Yeah.
Almost 45%.
So, but, you know, with Disney moving into the budget market,
yeah.
But again, that all kind of got lost in the notion of, oh my God, Disney's going to restore Walker Ranch to this pristine, you know, and every time Disney turned around, the price kept getting hiked because, you know, I mean, for example, you know, they're trying to get it through the approval process and somebody finds this site, you know, the piece of land on site that has arsenic levels that are 20 times normal. And it's like, well, what the hell happened here? And it turns out that in the 1930s, that's actually how you treated cattle for ticks.
With arsenic.
With arsenic. You sent them to an arsenic bath. And, you know, that killed the ticks and, of course, had no impact at all on the meat.
I mean, no, like, none. I mean, like, it washes right off. It's more like a marinade.
So
mesquite arsenic. It's a
there you go.
Yeah,
it's kind of a tangy thing. Of course, you have to got to lie down really quickly after that. But anyway, and meanwhile, while this is all going on, there's still 500 head of cattle on the ranch. I mean, it's still a working ranch until such time as Disney closes the deal.
Right.
And you know, it just that. And at the same time, the, you know, Disney keeps thinking, well, we should have this open to the public, because, you know, it's got the Disney name on it.
It's
the Nature,
good PR, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Nature Conservancy is butting heads with them. It's like, no, I mean, we've got bald eagle nesting areas. We've got places that, you know, need heavy-duty restoration.
It's 7,500 acres. You can put in a few walking trails. I mean,
well, that's an interesting thing, Len, because that when they did finally be, you know, all the, you know, it wasn't till December of 1992 that, you know, sort of the final pieces, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency at this point gives its blessing. So that
how many years did that take then?
Oh, God. It wasn't till April of 93 that they could finally do sort of a dedication ceremony. And here's the funny thing. The then Florida Governor Lawton Childs comes out to
I remember.
Okay. And what he talks about is, you know, as a kid, I used to sneak under the fence here and poach.
not the message, Lawton. Not the message.
Well, but here's the thing. All right, so you know, again, Disney's trying to turn this into this great PR thing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's funny.
But every couple of months, it comes back and bites them in the ass. I mean, for example, literally two months after the place opens, Disney finds itself dealing with a PR nightmare for the wilderness because The Nature Conservancy is now trying to get a handle on getting the land ready to restore. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is they find out that they have an awful wild pig problem. So, you know, what do they do? They
Disney's like, short ribs.
Well, actually, Disney's kind of like, you know, us, the studio that made the Three Little Pigs, you know, and it's, you know, that they end up trapping them and shooting them. And so this then starts to become a narrative that, again, the Nature Conservancy people, the people who are protecting nature, are killing wild pigs out at the Disney Conservancy.
Yeah.
And then to try to put a good face on this, the Nature Conservancy says, well, you know, what we're going to do is every third pig we're going to dress and deliver to a homeless shelter in Orlando. And Disney's like, did you really have to tell people there were homeless problem in Florida? You know?
First rule, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
There you go. But here's where it gets fascinating in that. So Disney, again, this wetlands mitigation thing. Other people or other big corporations in Florida start looking at this thing. It's like, that's a great idea. So here's Universal getting ready to expand out and start doing Islands Adventure. What does it do? It buys 270 acres adjacent to the 8,500 acres that Disney bought. And same thing, offers it to the Nature Conservancy so that they can then do sort of a mitigation on the land they're going to fill in. Same thing with the Orlando International Airport. They're expanding their runway, but going into wetlands. They buy 1,900 acres right next to the preserve. And that works out so well for them. They turn around and buy another 500 acres.
So it's almost like 11,000 acres.
Yeah. So now, at this point, it's just shy of 12,000 acres.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and the weird thing is that because of what Disney did in this wetlands mitigation situation, this actually opens the door for a lot of things that modern corporations do between the carbon credits, the environmental offsets.
I was gonna say, it sounds like carbon market, right? The market for carbon credits. Yeah,
that's exactly. And meanwhile, again, the Nature Conservancy can't help but, you know, do these things that make it somewhat controversial. I mean, for example, in order to get the land back to where it was in the 1880s, they keep doing these series of controlled burns where, they'll be burning 3,000 acres at a time, which, again, sounds a little weird, but this is actually how the forest primeval in Florida. I mean, this is how would sort of clean itself and start over. There'd be a lightning strike, would burn to the ground, and then, you know, you'd have all of the natural stuff come back the way it's supposed to.
Right. But, yeah, you hear about this in the West a lot, where they say that years and years and years of man trying to prevent the forest fires actually causes the problem to get worse. And eventually, when the fires come through, they're just terrible because all this stuff is built up and we haven't let nature run its course every once in a while and you know, purge everything and start over.
Yep. And now the downside is that, of course, you've got Point Siena just a few miles away that has the sea of black smoke come through every time that they do this.
Again, it's like smelling a giant barbecue. That's the way I would pitch this.
Yeah. So, but anyway, by January of 1995, enough restoration work is done that they could finally allow the first sets of visitors to come in. So 2 years of burns and builds and, you know, ripping out roads and ditches and that sort of thing.
Wow, 2 years.
And now the land is pretty much back to the way it was when the first Spanish missionaries came to this part of Central Florida. And,
wow.
To sort of bring things full circle here, just 2 years ago, in 2012, regulators determined that the restoration of the Disney Wilderness Preserve, the wetlands, was so successful, it was actually having a discernible impact on both the quality and the quantity of the water that was going into the greater Everglades watershed. And
wow, that's fantastic.
So this is now, in a weird sort of way, the Disney Wilderness Preserve is now the template that's used by the Nature Conservancy. When it comes, and in fact, they have continue to buy up ranches around Florida and do this exact thing.
Oh, so they still manage it. They haven't...
Nope.
Wow.
So, now I know, again, to the hardcore Disney fans, you know, that this really... This is a tangential story for them. I mean, they're more interested about the theme parks and the resorts. But you have to understand this. If it had not been for this deal, if, you know, some bright, enterprising executive at Disney hadn't thought to buy and restore the Walker Ranch and then use that as a way to mitigate the PR disaster, we probably wouldn't have seen Osceola County.
We wouldn't have Animal Kingdom or the Valley Resorts.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Huh. And, you know, so that makes you wonder, well, what then would have happened? You know, would Disney have just concentrated on building in Orange County, or would they have not done these projects at all?
It's interesting, but this is the story behind the story.
There you go. But for me, the part of this that fascinates me, and in fact, that's kind of want to use this as the button for the show, that somebody must know someone who had a family member who was an environmentalist or was working in ecology or that sort of thing. But somebody must have taken that electric boat ride and gone down into the Reedy Creek in the early 70s. You know, and I just wonder if somebody knows a family who actually did it, we'd love to hear stories about this.
Oh, yes, yeah, so if any of our listeners have done it.
Yeah, because I mean, I, as somebody who loves Disney history, I know there are the people who, you know, what they think, they always say, oh, if Walt had just lived a few more years, you know, that we'd have gotten Epcot the city. And I hate to say this, but for me, the thing about if Walt had lived a few more years, we would have gotten that swamp ride. And I want to know what that was.
That's what you wanted. You want to know what it was like.
I want to know what that was like. So.
we'll ask if anybody on the who's listening has memories of it, or as a family member who's done it, please let us know. I'll also tweet that out to him, and perhaps there might be, you know, some YouTube video or something out on there.
We can
or the whole meme or something. Oh, that'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Oh, great story, Jim. This is really, really good. I love the behind the story stuff that you bring to the show. This is fantastic.
And at the same time, seriously, if you're ever down in Florida and have that extra day, Nancy and I went out one afternoon and hiked the trails at the Wilderness Preserve.
I've done it.
And it's just it's almost, for lack of a better term, Central Florida sorbet. You know, I mean, it's you're out there. It's quiet, and it's just, this is what it was like. This is. You know, this is what Walt looked at and said, I can put the castle there and I can put it here. And, you know,
the one thing you have to tell people, there is no cell phone coverage at all. I had texted Laurel the night before. Yep. I was Bob and I were going the night that I was going. And then apparently she tried to call me all day while I was there, and there was no cell phone coverage. So by the time I called her in the evening, she had already started planning her life alone. Like, she's like, well, you know, this is where I'm going to wear to the funeral if we find his body. You know, this is I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. It's kind of touching. I'm like, no, really, I was gone for 12 hours, you know. But it was, middle of nowhere. So just tell people that you're not going to be able to get calls.
Well, but on the other hand, if you bring some semaphore flags, it really is a fun day.
Smoke signals, yeah, exactly.
There we go. So.
Great story. Well, thanks very much, Jim, for the news. This was fantastic. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide at Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Please go into iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care, guys.